Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. Hope all is good with you and yours. And thank you for being here as always. Another week of our off season is done and dusted. Has anything happened? No. No, it hasn't. And the week has been pretty much dominated by the same two names we've heard over and over this summer, Gabriel Jesus and Yuri Tielemans. And beyond that, there wasn't anything of great substance when it comes to Arsenal transfers until, like, literally about an hour ago. And I should point out the first part of this podcast was recorded before the news broke that we are, it seems, extremely interested and possibly quite far down the line in signing a 22-year-old player from Porto called Fabio Vieira, I think it's pronounced. I'm not sure. I haven't really heard that name before. A 22-year-old attacking midfield player, got 16 assists for Porto in all competitions last season. I've done some very brief, in inverted commas, scouting by watching a couple of YouTube videos and some clips on Y-Scout. Technically, he looks very good. He's creative. He's got some end product. Lovely quick feet at times to get out of challenges or to win some free kicks in dangerous areas. And having never really heard of him until now, I'm absolutely all in. Bring him to North London. I will be devastated now if this doesn't happen. So that's a nice little development. A player that maybe, when you look at his profile, I saw people saying, does this mean Tielemans isn't happening? Different kind of player by the looks of it. He looks like he could play where Saka plays. He also looks like he could play where Odegaard plays. And we don't really have anyone to share the burden too much with Martin Odegaard. So I think that is something that we've had to think about this summer. And what I like about this as well is that apparently the discussions and all that kind of stuff have been going on for weeks and weeks and weeks. And nothing has been in the media. Not a single dicky bird. This is clearly something that they've kept under wraps as much as possible. But of course, in this day and age, transfer news comes out eventually, and it does look as if he could be a player who could join Arsenal this summer. We'll have to wait and see if he does. If he does, we will do a proper deep dive podcast for you, as we always do over on Patreon. For now, though, we'll just keep our fingers crossed that another technical attacking player is coming into this squad, because the more of those we have, the better, in my opinion, and it gives us depth in key areas of the pitch, so fingers crossed on that one. Before we get into the main bit of the show, I got a package during the week, and I got a message from the post office here in Ireland to say, there's a package here, but we're not delivering it to you until you pay the customs charges on it. And I was like, what is this? What is this package? And I had a look, and it said in the description, gift, membership gift. And I was like, I wonder what that, it could be the Arsenal membership thing. And indeed, given that it was from the UK, and Brexit now means that anyone who sends anything from the UK to Ireland, to receive it, we have to pay customs charges, which work out at about, I think, about 25% of the nominal value of the package itself. Anyway, excitedly, I opened up my Arsenal membership pack for 2022-23, and I got a plastic cup, some kind of tripod for a mobile phone that looks like it would struggle to hold up any mobile phone of the modern era, and a pair of weird tiny gloves with little red bubbles on the front of them. I think I had to pay €4, something like that, for them to deliver the package. And I would say the value of the items inside is about 40p. So if you're in Ireland, maybe it's the same across Europe. I don't quite know if the same thing applies in other European countries, that you have to pay to receive this package. Yeah, you might want to think about it. That's all I'm saying. I think they're just saving the money for the transfers. I mean, that's probably what it is. All right, then, let's get on with the show today. And we're doing the statements format today, which is where I put statements to my guest and they have to either strongly agree, disagree, or strongly disagree with them. And we can obviously jump off those for various talking points along the way. And with me to do that from CBS Sports, it's James Bench. Hi, James.
Hi, Andrew. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you very much. Before we get into the statements part of this, I just want to talk briefly about the fixture list, which was out today, Thursday, as we're recording. Arsenal away to Crystal Palace on the opening day of the season, starting the season again on a Friday night, tinfoil hat and all that kind of stuff. But just some brief thoughts on the fixture list. I mean, I look at October and I go, ooh, and I look at April and go, ooh. But the start to the season itself, I think there have been more challenging ones in recent years for Arsenal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you compare it to Unai Emery's first season or last season, you take it, although I did... I mean, to be honest, I'm kind of mentally assigning 3 points to Crystal Palace on that game. I know that Arsenal's record isn't as disastrous as we might think, but I think, you know, on the occasions, you know, where it's a night game, I know they won quite awkwardly. They won back in 2020-21, but obviously last season and one of Wenger's later seasons, those 3-0 losses, I think a boisterous Selhurst Park. And it will certainly be that on the first day of the season. It's the sort of place that spooks Arsenal. And I know that I would expect it to be a very different team, a team with a few more reasons to be excited. But yeah, I feel like it's going to be a really tough opening game. But like you say, a chance to build momentum. And I think that's something Arsenal have needed. It feels like it's been a long time since they've had a season where they're not behind the eight ball, where they're not playing catch up until November, December at best. And I think if they could get that run together, if they could go into October in a good position, it would be all right. And none of those big clusters of horrible games, which always seem to hit Arsenal. And, you know, I think it's a big boost not to have that because they can spoil momentum.
Yeah. I mean,
I was going to say, as last season proved, it doesn't have to be against three top quality teams for them to have a cluster of horrible games.
No, that is true. That is true. And look, I looked at Crystal Palace away and thought, oh God, you know, because it is a ground at which Arsenal have struggled. But I feel like this coming season, which is still a good way away, is one in which Arsenal need to overcome some psychological blocks in many ways. One of which is, you know, dealing with a ground like Selhurst Park, where we found it difficult, and overcoming the atmosphere and the occasion and things like that, and you know, that whole thing about, you know, being able to deal with going behind in games and overcoming those kind of things. You know, it's a good chance maybe for Arsenal to show some progression in that regard, even if it is a case of, I think we've only won one of our last eight against Crystal Palace. So,
I mean, I just look at it and I always think, you just sort of assign every single game as a defeat, don't you? Maybe that's just me, but you go, oh, I don't like the look of that. Don't like the look. And then you're in mid-November and you go, I haven't actually seen a game I think Arsenal will win yet.
We'll get there. Don't worry about it. We've shown, I think, last season that we can do things that might surprise people. Well, we're going to get on with the statements element of this podcast, because the format is I put statements to you, which have been kindly sent in by our Patreon members on the Discord, and you have to either strongly agree, disagree, or strongly disagree with those statements. And there's one about the fixture list. It comes from Aaron, who says, the fixture list makes no difference. For example, or he says, that is, who you play when has no impact on your final standings.
Oh, strongly disagree. I think especially for a team like Arsenal this season, I have to say, I haven't checked the games, but my immediate thought is, let's go and look at those Europa League games. Tell me who are Arsenal playing after the group stages of those. Because I think there's, again, you know, we're talking about that October run.
Yeah.
I think that coincides with, and you know, a concertinaed Europa League group stage. I think similarly, April is around the time when Arsenal would be intending to be playing in the quarterfinals, semifinals. And so, of course, it matters what games you end up with at that stage of the season. Of course, kind of going back to what we were saying earlier about, you know, it matters that there is going to be, there is, I mean, I said there wasn't one, but, you know, there is a potential run in early October that could spoil any momentum where they're playing Tottenham, Liverpool, Leeds, Man City. And, you know, 4 points out of that seems like it might be par. And that really does, you know, it spoils momentum. Whereas if you're, you know, if the fixture list is kind to you, freakishly kind, and it spreads out all those big six games, spreads out, you know, gives you some favourable games at home, I think it does. And, you know, I was talking about this earlier in terms of the Liverpool-Man City race, where you know the standards are so high that even something like City playing four games at home after European games, that could, you know, that could be a swing issue. Similarly, you know, when it comes to the top four race this season, I think we probably all think that there will be a very fine gap between whoever's in third and whoever's in sixth. That would be my immediate view right now. Absolutely, having some good fixtures, you know, at important stage of the season can make all the difference in the world. So yeah, strong disagree.
Yeah, I would disagree. I know where he's coming from, in the sense that you've got to play somebody, you got to play them anyway at some point, so you might as well just, you know, crack on and deal with it. But look, you can have an easy run, particularly through those Thursday Sunday weeks in the group stage of the Europa League. And, you know, for the record, Arsenal's fixtures in October are Spurs, Liverpool, Leeds, Man City, Southampton and Nottingham Forest, and then Chelsea as the first game in November. So as we head towards that mid-season break for the World Cup, that schedule is pretty taxing. And yeah, I mean, you think about, as you said, Unai Emery, his first two games were Man City and Chelsea. Last season, Brentford, an occasion that, you know, we couldn't deal with for various reasons, some of which of our own making, others outside of our control when you think about the COVID cases and everything else. But then you've got Man City and you've got Chelsea. I mean, just on that, how do you think that fixture list will in any way change the way that Mikel Arteta and Edu are thinking about their summer business? Because you could say if you get the business done nice and early, you've got a full squad with lots of options that could take maximum points from those games. The flip side of that might be they look at it and go, well, you know what, that gives us a little bit of wiggle room towards the end of the transfer window. It means we can maybe do some deals a bit later in the window, which I know not everyone, or not anyone, in fact, wants to hear. Nobody wants to hear that we're going to go all the way to deadline day, but that is the reality of the market. It pushes clubs, not just Arsenal, to do deals later in the window. But, I mean, do you think they might be thinking, you know, if we can get these deals done early and well, we can get off to a flying start, particularly after last season?
I would think that end of it is more likely, isn't it? And I think it almost what will be playing in their mind just as much is how difficult it was for Arteta to even pick up those 3 points against Brentford, and, you know, even the early games in September, although they won them, still building all those automatisms or whatever you want to call them. I think, you know, and my understanding is they are really set on the two main signings. We know the names, we know the positions, we kind of know everything. They would really like to get them done in time for early in pre-season, for exactly that reason, you know, get them in, get them settled and get into September in a really rosy position in the table. I think, but like you say, I wonder maybe the lower priority deals, the let's see what we can do at the end of the window. I think there's an argument to then just bide your time. You don't need to rush, you know, bit of patience there.
Okay.
Yeah. But like you say,
yeah, I mean,
the big ones done.
Yeah. Get those two main ones in and you know, it's a good start, and then maybe you can add the depth, and it's about what kind of depth we add as well, though. Like I think there needs to be a bit more starting quality depth.
Yes.
In the team, you know, because we saw last season that some of the squad players weren't necessarily trusted, or if they were forced into action, the drop-off was a bit too big. So on that basis, here's one from, let me see if I can find it here. I should have these. Okay, yeah, it comes from Atty, who says, bringing in a quality addition to compete with Bukayo Saka on the right will help his development more than it will hinder it.
Yes, I would agree with that. I think maybe that's kind of, well, I mean, how could you not really? I don't think that Saka will kind of need to fear that he's not going to start week in, week out. But I do think, you know, it will help him, and possibly also encourages Arsenal and him to try out different positions. You know, I think Saka could make a great 10 one day, or an 8 for a weaker opponent. And, you know, if you've got let's say Rafinha, playing wide on the right, then yeah, I mean, you know, it's more options, more flexibility. I should say on Rafinha as well, one of the things that I was told is that they think he could also get some minutes, not many, as a 9. So there's that side to it.
Arsenal are thinking that Rafinha is a potential option, like, at 9, in that false 9 kind of vibe.
Yeah, in a similar, like, I mean, look, you know, we have to say with Gabriel Jesus there, the pitch is basically we're signing you to play 35 Premier League games as the starting number 9. But they kind of look at a player like Rafinha as someone that could do minutes there. That's one thing I've heard on that. But that's a bit of a sidetrack. But yes, no, I agree with that. I think the question that you kind of have with signing that right winger is whether it's just the right place to plonk resources. I probably lean on the side of yes, because I think you've got Smith Rowe, who can cover as a 10, and a 10 and 8, a left winger, Martinelli as well. And yeah, you know, you make Saka more versatile. Whoever you sign as a right winger, he can probably play on the left as well. And like I say, he can probably play as a, get minutes as a false 9 striker, however you want to use him. I think fluidity and variety, it all works. So yes, I agree that it will be good for Saka's development to have competition to play elsewhere. And also I think it is a good place to put resources. You just need to find a way to clear out Nicolas Pepe, to be frank.
Well, there's a different discussion, and myself and James talked about that on Monday in the Arscast Extra. The solution is obvious, but getting there is complicated. Yeah. Sort of like looking across the river at a beautiful oasis, but you know, you've got to cross crocodiles and piranha fish and all that kind of stuff, and jump on logs to get there. I'll have to wait and see. But do you worry a bit about Saka and the physical demands that have been placed on him in the last 2 years, maybe 18 months in particular, post Euros, hugely relied upon, and understandably so, by Mikel Arteta, and then away with England. He's only just finished this week. I mean, part of their thinking must be they've got to have somebody who can help him in that regard. If we can talk about him playing left wing, 10, 8, I think he's talented enough to play anywhere across that, you know, second forward line, if you want to call it that, rather than striker. And certainly in midfield, he's got the ability to do it. But I do wonder if part of what we're thinking will be, we have a very, very important asset here that we have to look after in some ways.
Yeah, you look at what Manchester City and even Liverpool, when they play far more games than Arsenal, you look at how they, you know, their wide forwards just do not start week in, week out, even the very best of them. And even a Kevin De Bruyne, he gets more sort of rest time allotted to him. And you know, we know what's happened at Arsenal with talented youngsters like Jack Wilshere. To an extent, one might argue, although I know there was that injury, but one could even put a case for a player like an Aaron Ramsey, Theo Walcott as well, that, you know, you do need to ease players into their bodies. Michael Owen, another example that comes to mind. And I think, you know, 18 months of this, it will probably have an impact, but it could be a more sizable impact the longer Arsenal just run Saka into, you know, run Saka hard. I thought he looked so tired for England. I mean, I watched that Hungary game. It was dreadful all around the pitch, but, you know, And he, when the ball came to him, he had ideas. He looked like he might do something, but it was also just like the mind was a fair way ahead of where the legs were by that stage of the season.
Yeah. While we're on England, Elliot Watson asks, and you can answer this one because for me, it's not really an issue, but he says England should sack Gareth Southgate and get a new manager in for the World Cup.
Disagree. I don't strongly disagree because I think it has got to the stage now where when a team is struggling, it's not a lunatic view. I think it's the sort of fringe sort of monster raving loony adjacent view of a manager that has taken England to a World Cup semi-final and a European Championships final. Everyone wants England to play this beautiful, free-flowing, attacking football that Pep Guardiola, Jurgen Klopp and Erik ten Hag and whoever else you want to name have years on the training ground to perfect. And Gareth Southgate has sort of 3 weeks a year with half his squad that he wants to play at the World Cup not missing or injured or whatever. And people go, well, I mean, why is this not pleasing to me in aesthetic terms? You go, well, it's international football. It's not supposed to be pleasing. Like, you don't watch international football to enjoy football at its highest art form. You watch it to, you know, dig your own eyes out of pure stress and tension at the possibility that your nation might be about to lose to Germany yet again. He gets results. I would not, you know, when he leaves England at some stage, I will not be advocating for him to manage at Arsenal because he's not an elite manager, but elite managers don't want to do this job. It's awful.
Some would say that, you know, the international game would be the pinnacle of, used to be anyway, the idea that the international game was the pinnacle of the game and your football should reflect that. I mean, I completely understand why, despite the successes, there might be doubters of Gareth Southgate based on the way that he plays. And you can say, look, he gets results. And if Arsenal had 35 1-0 wins next season, we'd all be delighted with that in the end. But, you know, we have to suffer through that. But I don't see any change being made before the World Cup. He does have a lot of really good attacking young players at his disposal, which, you know, there's a tendency towards conservatism, which maybe doesn't reflect the depth and quality that he has in certain positions. But anyway, that's not my problem as an Irishman. So there we go. Adi Fash says, our transfer policy has ruined our ability to sell and may not recover for many years.
I don't know what you think about this, but I sort of lean towards disagree because I just don't... There are things Arsenal could do better, a lot better, a lot better when it comes to selling players. But then we say the same thing about United, about Tottenham, about Chelsea. Other than Liverpool and to an extent City, although, you know, that, I mean, City obviously have the very specific circumstances that they are financially inured from making mistakes. The mistakes are irrelevant. Mm. The thing is, You can't bring a footballer to Arsenal without paying something approximating an Arsenal wage. Same at Tottenham, United, etc. And that Arsenal wage is just above and beyond so many clubs in Europe, other than the very pinnacle. Mm. So the only players you can really sell are the players that the richest teams in Europe would want, which are your best players. So, I mean, like Lucas Torreira here is a prime example. Like, you know, and I don't think Fiorentina have not acted well in this. But in the end, you know, they were asked to pay 15 million euros, pay, you know, a new salary for Torreira. These are huge expenses for a team like Fiorentina, even after they've sold Vlahovic. You know, they are running low on, you know, they are running low on money after 18 months of pandemic. Here's a great example for me, Hector Bellerin.
Mm.
I think we all remember that contract as a triumph for Arsenal. And I think we're right to do so at the time. You know, Barcelona wanted him. Manchester City wanted him. Chelsea wanted him. And he said, I'll stay 6 years, you know, committing to what we kind of thought would be his prime years. And now they can't shift him because, I mean, you know, obviously hasn't developed in quite the way. I mean, Arsenal weren't really to know, although it kind of goes back to what we were saying about Saka a little bit, But Arsenal weren't really to know that he wasn't going to become one of the best fullbacks in Europe. And, you know, he hasn't. And therefore, it wouldn't shock me if we end up talking about him being another player whose contract they have to tear up. I think the contract thing, it's hard to get a read on. A lot of other clubs would just be sending these players out on loan year in, year out, and almost doing the same thing. And I think maybe there's an argument to just biting the bullet, moving on, not having to deal with it, another year of it. But obviously, once you do it once or twice, you know, could you blame Bellerin's agents if they said, do for us what you did for Mustafi, Kolasinac, etc.?
Yeah, of course.
And it's going to be very hard to change the expectation whilst Edu is there that is just what you do. If you're not getting games, if you're on big wages, Arsenal will pay you to go away. But I do think a lot of those problems in 2022 are kind of intractable for the Premier League's richest clubs. And it's not unique to Arsenal. Of course, it feels like it because Arsenal fans live the Arsenal experience every day. But I can tell you, you know, Manchester United have just gone through these problems with Lingard, Mata, Phil Jones, Twanzabi, whoever you want to name, and they'll have it with Wan-Bissaka. Yeah, happens.
It is. I don't know that it's policy per se, as just the circumstances and the continued expansion of the Premier League's wealth in relation to the contraction in wealth across Europe because of the TV deals and because of how high profile it is. I do wonder, you know, particularly with the Fiorentina and Torreira thing, if they looked at what Arsenal have done in the last number of years and said, well, we'd be idiots if we don't at least try to get a knockdown price on this guy. Like, you know, obviously they like him. He was player of the month 3 times. You know, he had a good season there. There's no reason why they wouldn't want to keep him. I did read a bit about how Torreira's agent and the Fiorentina executives had a bit of a falling out, and that might be as much on Torreira's agent as it is on Fiorentina's executives. And we know that their owner, he really, really does not think well of agents and the demands of agents and the demands of players in the modern game. He kind of has come from the States and thinks it's ludicrous, and he's not going to get involved, and he won't be held over a barrel by anybody. But the perception of Arsenal as a selling club really is in a place where it needs to change. And I do wonder if that might be part and parcel of what we see this summer, because there are some players who could go for a reasonable money, you know, Leno to Fulham, Maitland-Niles, Reece Nelson, not hugely high profile guys, but because of their Englishness, Leno because of his experience and international experience selling to another Premier League club. I think there is the opportunity for Edu to perhaps shift it a little bit. I'm not saying turn it around completely, but I do think we are in a place where we are perceived because of what's happened in a very specific way that I think is just a little bit different, and maybe that's just me living the Arsenal experience, just a little bit different from other clubs who have difficulty selling players onto to Europe. But it's going to be a challenge, isn't it, for Edu this summer? There's a lot of outgoing business to do as well as a lot of incoming business.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. And obviously, if you can find those Premier League teams to take your squad players, I think that is when the transfer kitty blows up significantly. And we've seen that with, you know, where have the good sales gone to? They've gone to Newcastle with Willock, and they've gone to Everton and Liverpool with Iwobi and Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Yeah.
And I think at the moment, Arsenal have a couple of players, like you say, Leno, Maitland-Niles, I mean, maybe Nelson, although from what I'm told, he's quite keen on going back to Europe and to a league where he could play in European competition. I mean, that's kind of the other challenge, isn't it? Is a lot of Arsenal's European players go, oh, I don't really want to stay in the Premier League. I haven't enjoyed it here because I've been, you know, on the fringes at Arsenal. But, you know, I think you can change that reputation, but it is hard.
Yeah.
It's hard for people to not think of Edu, for as long as Edu's at Arsenal, as the guy that rips up contracts. And getting some good sales will certainly help that, but may not change it entirely with veterans. And I'd be intrigued to see what happens if Fulham doesn't pay off for Leno, whether he's another one that, you have those conversations about.
I mean, that is also. That is a situation where, you know, the longer it goes in the window, you've got a goalkeeper who you've already replaced him, basically, because they've got Matt Turner in. And then you're like, oh, we've got an abundance of resources here. I mean, it is part and parcel of how Arsenal are going to be able to buy is selling. And it's volume of sales rather than, I think, a big windfall on any particular player that will bring in the kind of revenue that can be invested elsewhere. Speaking of signings, we did make one, of course. And Trout says Marquinhos will play 500 plus minutes next season.
Ooh. I mean, I kind of have to say I don't have a clue. I've kind of been on Y Scout, watched a little bit of it. I mean, he's a bit like more robust than I thought he would be, is a polite way of putting it. He's not going to be a guy that's easily brushed off the ball. Obviously, the plan is he comes in pre-season, much like Martinelli did. Mm. And you'll remember out on that US tour, day dot, people were blown away by Martinelli. And it was kind of apparent in those preseason tour games that Emery was going to give him a look. 500 minutes? I don't know. It's impossible to know.
I
like the look of him, I have to say.
All right. I mean, the idea that I think was reported last week was that when Wolves were interested and had their whatever agreement they had with him, which of course, you know, is by the by now, but they were going to loan him straight out to Grasshoppers, which would suggest that they don't think he's quite ready for Premier League, but Europa League group stage, that's an opportunity, I guess, to have a look at a guy who, you know, in very real terms, up close and personal, you know, we know when Arsenal send players out on loan, they have people looking at them and they've got, you know, a dedicated loan manager to keep tracks of players and all that kind of stuff. But there's nothing quite like putting a guy into a match day scenario and seeing, not quite sink or swim, but to see how he reacts. And you can gauge the performances and gauge the reaction of a player quite easily in that sense. So it's possible. But I think I would disagree. I think he'll be, well, 500 minutes, that's all competitions, not Premier League minutes.
It's five and a half games.
Yeah. I'm going to say, depending on the draw of the EFL Cup, I'll agree.
So the other thing I'd throw in that, I mean, the World Cup intrigue, you know, or its impact on the Premier League clubs is so intriguing in so many ways. I kind of think if you're thinking about loaning someone out for the whole season, then you've got to know. I mean, it's only 3 months. And I do think for 3 months with a player like Marquinhos, we're guessing here a lot, aren't we? If he's good, if he's okay, if he's worthy of being in your squad when you're going to be playing a lot of games very quickly, I think better to have him around, especially when he's going to have to, you know, come back or sit around doing nothing between mid-November and January. So if I'm making a prediction with no reporting, no nothing, I think he might just hang around for the first half of the season and then head out in January.
Okay. Where is the question that I was going to ask here? It comes from Sten10, who says, with Scotland not qualifying for the World Cup, Tierney will have his best season at the club to date, playing most of the matches he has so far in an injury, a season injury-free, benefiting hugely from the forced break he gets in November and December.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'd not thought of that. That's a very good point that I've got very little to push back on. I still think it's important that, you know, Arsenal find a loan home for Nuno Tavares, who's clearly, a player who needs to play week in, week out, make mistakes, not in an Arsenal shirt, and that Arsenal do have, because Tierney is still, I think, vulnerable to impact injuries, the likes of that. It seems like they're going to dog him throughout his career. So I think Arsenal will still need a backup, but I like that point. It's a good point and one I hadn't considered.
So you think Nuno Tavares should go on loan next season?
Yeah, definitely. I think he's good, or he could be good, but he's just so raw. And I don't think you deal with that. You know, it puts me in mind of some of the sort of younger players that were coming through in the early Emirates era when Wenger would sort of not play them quite often enough. Like maybe a Danielson, who I know actually did have that one season where he played a lot.
An Armand Traore, dare I say?
An Armand Traore is a much better example. You could see the talent there, but you only saw him once every, a few times every 6 weeks.
Mm.
And so they weren't getting the repetitions to learn what to do right. So I would loan out Tavares and get someone in. Of course, as we were saying earlier, that really depends on being able to sell well, to up the budget a bit.
Yeah, it's such an interesting one, because if they do loan Tavares, they'd need another left back. If they buy another left back, it suggests that Tavares is pretty much surplus to requirements. And we talked about Marquinhos in the first 3 months of the season and the Europa League games and everything else. I suppose it really depends on how they view his suitability to deputise for a long period if Kieran Tierney gets injured. Like, if he gets another injury and is 3 months out, are they confident that Nuno Tavares can cope? That might be the decision maker. I don't know exactly how you could be unless you've, you know, had discussions and coaching over the course of the summer, whatever it might be. But then, of course, the player that we have been linked with as a potential arrival who could provide that cover at left back is Aaron Hickey, who's only 19. And similarly is, I'm not saying he's the same player as Nuno Tavares, but is he ready to come in and play for 3-4 months at left back at Premier League level if Tierney gets another injury? It is a really interesting, like, if I was Mikel Arteta, I'd be so happy to have Kieran Tierney, but in the back of my mind, it's sort of like, I don't know, it's like someone tells you, I've put a bomb in your car. I might never explode the bomb, but maybe one day when you're driving to the shops, that bomb is going to go off. Now, it won't kill you, but it will wreck your car for a while. You have to bring it in the shop. I don't want to get too dark with all this. But that has to be in the back of your mind, right? When you're thinking about Kieran Tierney, is like, what a great player. What a great character. But, you know, you're thinking, when is it going to happen?
It's April. Isn't it?
It's April.
Set your watch by it.
I mean, that's a situation that they're going to have to be thinking about. Hayland Hurula says, Gabriel Martinelli will score a dozen or more goals in the Premier League during the 22-23 season.
I think that's quite ambitious. I'm just kind of looking up now as I speak, so trying to fill some dead air while I try and look up how many he scored last season. I want to say it was sort of around 5, so you're talking more than 6. So doubling his output. He played 29 games, a lot of them coming off the bench, but he's going to be coming off the bench next season if a new winger arrives. If a new winger doesn't, there's still Smith Rowe to fit into this squad. I would disagree. But I think it will go up. I think that we saw him take strides in this season to become a much better player. I would be impressed by double figures. I think maybe 8 or 9. And actually, that's for a left winger. If you're going for top four, that's... maybe it's not it. I think the big... We know that Arsenal's where Arsenal need to improve their goals. 8, 9, 10, yeah, it's okay. It's not bad for a player of his age. I think he will eventually be 15-ish a season.
Yeah.
I would
hope for double figures at least from him in all competitions. Not necessarily Premier League, because we do have those Europa League group stage games and you know, hopefully some knockout ties in the Europa League, which, you know, aren't as taxing as they might be. So I think him taking a step forward next season, I think he can do more. I think he can deliver more. I think he's got more end product in him, for sure. There were some chances towards the end of the season which didn't quite go where he would have liked them to, but they weren't far away. And I just wonder if he's the kind of player, if he can get on an early run of goals in the season, whether it's Premier League or Europa League, I think that will stand him in good stead. So I would agree that he's capable of that in all competitions. In just Premier League terms, I'm not 100% sure. We did have another one here from BF Jesus, who says an Arsenal player will score more than 16 goals in the Premier League.
16's a lot, isn't it? 16's like top five in the... I mean, I think 16's about what Ronaldo scored. But then, you know, you kind of go through... I know you're not a big one for XG and all that, but when you look at who gets the, you know, per 90, the one of the highest XGs in the Premier League, it's always that man, Gabriel Jesus. He gets shots away. He gets in positions. And I know that part of that's Man City, but I think a lot of it also does come down to the striker. 16.
So the players who got... Ronaldo got 18. Salah was top scorer at 23. Some other guy also got 23. No idea who he is. Ronaldo, 18. Harry Kane. Don't know who that guy is. Never heard of him. Sadio Mane, 16. De Bruyne, 16. Diogo Jota, 15. Vardy, 15. But then you have someone like Wilfred Zaha, who got 14 for Crystal Palace, which is a hell of a return, you know, for I don't know how to say it, for a player like him and a team like that. I don't mean it like that, but that is a really good return for a left winger. So it's not beyond the realms of possibility.
That Zaha guy sounds quite good. I wonder if Arsenal have ever tried to...
Don't think so.
Well, maybe be keen.
But I mean, wouldn't that be kind of the... I don't mean to say the minimum requirement, but if you are bringing in someone like Gabriel Jesus and you are going to give him those 35, 36, maybe 38 games as your number nine, that, you know, I think people look at 20 goals as the mark of a top-class striker, and maybe that's not who he is or where he is just yet, but I think you've got to be looking at least 15 from your main striker in the Premier League, at least 15. And I think what's curious or interesting about Arsenal is the fact that there are goals from wide position. Smith Rowe with 11 last season, Saka with 12 from the wide areas. We've already talked about Martinelli. There could be another addition in there. You know, Martin Odegaard can score more. So I think you're looking at minimum 15 as the marker of a good season for Gabriel Jesus, if he is a player. I know we're talking about him like we've already got him, and that's not the case. I'm sort of a little bit anxious about everything, of course. But, you know, that's what you'd be looking for, right?
Yeah, actually, you know, I think I'm going to lean towards agree, because Arsenal did create a lot of chances last season, and they were getting better as the year wore on. Carry on that trajectory. We know that's going to... I mean, as you say, we don't know if it'll be Gabriel Jesus, but we know there'll be someone new and shiny, and you'd like to hope pretty good through the middle. So like you say, 16, that should be about right. I'd be happy with that. I think any more than that is a good season. So yeah, 16, right. That's what we should expect.
O'Byrne 49 says, William Saliba playing for the club will cause as much divide in the fan base as him being out on loan.
Oh, strong agree. I you've got to be really careful about phrasing these sorts of things as well, haven't you? But I find it really sad for William Saliba that he has kind of been thrust into this role. And I don't know what it is about Arsenal broader fan culture, and I really don't think we should take Twitter as being entirely representative, even of just the online fan community, let alone... But also, it plays a big driving role in it. And for whatever reason, Twitter in the Arsenal sphere needs a player to divide people. Obviously, we all know, we all remember that we all fought in the Mesut Ozil wars. We tried to get Nicola Pepe going, but I think obviously right now it's pretty clear that it's hard to divide people on that. I think we all... But people want to argue, and Saliba will naturally provoke... He will, because he will be the person that is spoken about every time Gabriel or Ben White make a mistake. And I think, you know, there will be those whose natural inclination is to argue against that and will be looking for Saliba slip-ups. It's so perverse, because I don't think Arsenal have managed this situation well, but where they've landed in is a perfectly decent spot, where they have a very good young centre-back who, you know, they'd like to bring into the team. But if that doesn't quite work out, he's obviously shown some talent, and you know, he can maybe earn Arsenal a decent return if he goes elsewhere. it doesn't need to be so divisive, but it is. And I don't really see much changing that unless Mikel Arteta decides to play a back three.
No,
to save our minds.
I don't see that happening. I don't see him playing a back three. And I just think there are, a nuanced view of William Saliba is not really something that drives a lot of online debate. I mean, people have picked their sides, whether they think Mikel Arteta is a bastard for doing whatever happened, or if William Saliba is being overhyped or whatever it is. I mean, I hope he comes in and does really well. I think it would be great for Arsenal to have three very good central defenders. I hope as well that he's able to cope with the expectation, because when you sign an 18-year-old central defender who's barely played a dozen professional games for £28.5 million, there is a level of expectation that comes with that, because people, particularly for a club like Arsenal, people would be, say, well, fuck, this guy must be amazing if Arsenal, of all clubs, are spending that much money on a kid who's, still got so much to learn, and you're still enduring the David Luiz / Mustafi art, in inverted commas, of central defending, performance art it might be, but maybe it's like one of those where it's just a mime artist flinging their own shit at you, So that, I think people...
It's the sort of thing you see at 4 a.m. at Glastonbury, and you wake up the following morning and you go,
was that real?
What was that? How much acid did I take?
Yeah, but he's had this sort of white knight thing thrust upon him unfairly, I think, because he was only 18 and a lot of stuff happened. So I hope he's got... I think the loan spell that he had last season at Marseille will really have been a big boost to him and his own confidence and his ability to deal with some top-class footballers in Liga. Not as many as he will face in the Premier League, but some. But also the fact that he's been called up for France. He was the Young Player of the Year. I think he should arrive at Arsenal feeling confident and ready for what the Premier League can throw at him.
Oh, yeah. He has kind of won an even tougher battle, like you say, in establishing himself in that France squad, which is riddled with top tier defenders. And I think, like you say, Marseille is almost a great place to get used to what life will be, because it's one of the great spotlights of French football as well, isn't it? And his every comment was passed over for meaning as to whether he was staying, whether he was going, and he will have to get used to that at Arsenal as well. Every time he speaks, he'll be asked about his contract if he hasn't signed one, things like that. So the journey has been chaotic, and I wouldn't trust the person that's been giving out directions, but but where Arsenal have got to is a good spot with Saliba. And I don't think that will mean that everyone will just chill the fuck out for 6 weeks. Give it 6 days.
Yeah, well, let's see. Hopefully there's a bit more plain sailing, because it's been choppy seas, that's for sure. We'll do a few quick ones to finish us off. Dangernomics says, the Premier League should approach referees like player transfers and sign the best refs and linesmen, assistant referees, I think they're called now, from leagues across the world rather than Greater Manchester.
Yeah, I agree. I quite like that. I just quite like the idea that the Premier League could become so all-encompassing and overpowering that referee transfer news would become.
Imagine there are referee transfer IT case. Fabrizio Romano. Here we go. Pierluigi Collina to the Premier League. Whoop, whoop. Yeah.
Just breathe. Yeah. Yes, please. Strongly agree.
I wouldn't mind seeing it, I have to say. I just, in general, would like to see a fairly substantial change in the way that refereeing is dealt with in the Premier League. And that's not just Mike Dean becoming the new VAR czar or whatever the hell he's going to be. Willie J says, Arteta ball is doomed to fail because the best player signings in each window for that system will go to teams with more money like Chelsea and Man City.
I mean, like, I suppose disagree, but because, I mean, there isn't just sort of one good player in every position.
Mm.
It's not, I mean, it's not doomed to fail. It's highly unlikely that Mikel Arteta will succeed by the standards that Arsenal and Arsenal supporters should hold, which is winning the title. I think at that level, he won't succeed. I think he will succeed if your expectations are adjusted to reality and where Arsenal are right now.
Mm.
But yeah, I mean, like, you know, I mean, Chelsea will spend loads of money, but they may well spend some of it on Romelu Lukaku. So I don't think it has to be a crisis. I mean, Manchester City, you just kind of need to wait till Pep gets bored and the people above him get bored and then hope. But
I don't think they'll get bored. Pep might. I don't think they will. And I think they'll, yeah, you know, they'll be in a position to bring in the best guy possible. Yeah. I mean, look, I try not to worry too much about what other teams do, because the focus really is on Arsenal and doing the best that we can in the transfer market. And I know people, you know, this week there was a bit of outcry when, you know, some team signed some midfielder that everybody liked. But, you know, all we can do is do what we have to and fill the positions we need to fill, play the games and see what the hell happens. So, yeah, and like you say, there is more than just one good player. Like, if it's a choice for a player between Man City and Arsenal, I mean, I think he's going to choose Man City. You know, the potential to, you know, win things and the money on offer would be, you know, much greater at Manchester City. No two ways about it. But I don't know that we're necessarily competing with Manchester City for any signings, apart from Erling Haaland, who, you know, dealt Arsenal a massive blow in the transfer window by plumping for plucky little underdogs, Manchester City. Greenkeeper JHB says Newcastle will be the biggest spenders in this transfer window.
I mean, certainly there or thereabouts, won't they? I think they kind of do want to build, or they, everything they say is that they're not kind of, everything they say is that they're not trying to run before they can walk. And I do think that's probably a shrewd way of going about things. You know, you don't want to bring Kylian Mbappe into a squad with John Joe Shelby. It's kind of better to raise the floor and then the ceiling,
yeah,
you know, yeah, rather than finding you've built a one story extension that sort of stretches up to the heavens and is no use to you. But yeah, I mean, you know, having said that, what they will do is just raise the floor with a string, I would think, of £30 million signings that all add up to more than, say, Liverpool spend on Nunez and a midfielder, more than Arsenal spend on Tielemans and Jesus or whoever they may be. And, you know, so it'll be between them, United, maybe Chelsea. Yeah. I'm not the person that's terrified that they will come and claim Champions League this season. I mean, it is coming. It is, you know, it is a bit of a juggernaut that you won't be able to stop. Mm. But right now, you know, unless they are willing to pay all the money in the world, and they may well be one day, but you're not going to Newcastle, much to say, you know, if you've got Arsenal in Newcastle, you would probably still choose Arsenal this summer and maybe next after that. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, look, Manchester City have had a lot of money for a long time. And, you know, I think they are in a place right now that it took them some time to get there. I mean, they had different owners, I know, but there's been a lot of money splashing around. And it does take time to build something that can be sustained. That's, I think, the issue that we will see with there. Where I think Man United, by the way, will probably be the biggest spenders in the transfer market, because they've decided that what they've been doing is not the right way to do it. They brought in a manager with some pedigree, but they're going to have to back that manager and back that manager in a fairly substantial way, and not just the kind of chaotic way they've been doing transfers for the last couple of years. There's going to be a bit of a plan to it. So I suspect they might be the ones.
I think they'll find a way to be chaotic, though.
I hope so.
Wishing to get all Sky Sports pundit. This is Manchester United Football Club. You know, this is what they do.
Let's hope so. Okay, let's take this final one. And I like this one. It comes from Fantastic Mr. Fox. He said, VAR checks take so long because their eventual goal is to fill that time with on-screen ads.
it's hard to sort of shake the scent. I mean, I think Vacek sometimes takes so long because in spite of everything we were promised at the outset, and I'm still just about pro VAR, they have indulged in a level of pedantry that is utterly ludicrous. But maybe you're right. And maybe actually, frankly, rather than just watching, you know, it's watching 700 different replays to see whether it skimmed the left fingernail of Aymeric Laporte or whether, you know, Socrates was a millimeter offside or whatever it may be. Frankly, I'm getting to the stage where maybe I'd just rather would watch some ads. So, you know, if that is the plan, it's working.
Crypto balls. Get your next
crypto.
Yeah, it's all about crypto and the, you know, Mike Dean NFTs, I think, are the new big thing. That's what we're going to
I'd buy them.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, who they could only go up in value. I can only imagine that they'll go
solid
up.
Solid investment.
All right, look, we have to leave it there. But James, pleasure to talk to you as always. And hopefully we can catch up again during the summer.
Bro, thanks for having me.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Thank you very much indeed to James. You can find him on Twitter. He is at James Benge, at James Benge, and he does football stuff for CBS Sports. Right. Well, that is just about that for this week's show. However, between the time that I recorded the first bit of the show and then pasted in the second bit of the show, and now I'm here doing this bit, there has been another tweet about Fabio Vieira. This time it comes from the man himself, David Ornstein. David says, Fabio Vieira set to join Arsenal from Porto. Fee, €35 million plus €5 million. 5-year deal. The 22-year-old attacking midfielder is flying to London today, Thursday, and will undergo a medical before completing the move. Process started and managed by Jorge Mendes. So, there you go. Exciting stuff. An out-of-the-blue signing. When was the last time we had one of those? Nacho Monreal, I guess, was a deadline day signing, but a summer transfer when there's always so much speculation. People will remember Eduardo da Silva just being announced out of nowhere. Nobody had any kind of clue that there was anything going on in the background. So over the weekend, I will get together with Phil Costa, and we will do, as we always do when Arsenal sign a new player, our new player pod. We'll have it over on Patreon, patreon.com/arsblog. We will probably have that for you on Saturday.
assuming that there's no spanner in the works or anything like that and everything continues along track. So you can join myself and Phil, find out more about the player on the podcast. And of course, you guys can check out his YouTube compilations. I've watched a couple today and they look very tidy indeed. But we'll discuss him as a player. Phil knows him pretty well, having watched the European Under-21 Championships in some detail. So we'll get a lot more background on Fabio Vieira over the weekend. So join us for that on Patreon. James and I will be here on Monday with another Arsecast Extra. Who knows who we will have signed by then. Sunday's probably just going to be like a quiet day, and then transfer bombs going off all over the place. As always, thank you very much indeed for being here. Hope you enjoyed the show. We will catch you on the next one. Have yourselves a great weekend. Until then, cheers. Bye-bye. How would I sum myself up? Well, I guess I would say I'm just an average guy with an above average knowledge of Arsenal transfer news. Do you think it's any coincidence that my name is Ian Thomas Kelly? That's right. I am literally ITK. I've forgotten more about Arsenal transfer business than you will ever know. Than any man on the street could possibly be aware of. All the names, all the positions, the negotiating stances, why a deal is done, why a deal wasn't done, why it broke down. I know it all. And there's literally no one, no one, who can hold a candle or any other kind of flaming device you might like to present to me when it comes to Arsenal's transfer business. Fabio Vieira, you say? No. That name doesn't ring a bell. Why?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.